I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Mohamed El-Sheikhi grew up in Libya, living under what he calls the casual dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi. He survived the revolution, worked as a translator, went to medical school for a few years, co-hosted a radio show that got his station burned down, came to the U.S. to study under a State Department program, and just last year was granted asylum because of the dangers he would face in Libya. He's been living in Portland, Oregon since 2014. That is the circuitous route Mohamed El-Sheikhi took to stand-up comedy, the surprise result of a public speaking class. Here's a clip from a performance at the Helium Comedy Club in Portland last year.
My name is Mohamed, that's my name. I am an immigrant, and it's super weird being an immigrant now in this country. I don't know if you've been watching the news lately for the past 20 years. But also it's weird being an immigrant here in Portland specifically, because everyone here has a sign next to their door that reads something like, "Immigrants are welcome here." And I want to test that so bad. I just want to open someone's front door and be like, "Well, I am here." Yeah, thank you. Is that the kitchen? Cool, go make me something. I'll wait here, yeah. Seasoning, please, yeah.
White people, Mohamed El-Sheikhi, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. We got a big kick out of that, I have to say. That's very fun. Nice to have you with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So where to start? I actually think we should start by talking about radio, your career on radio, because here, obviously, we are talking on radio. What was your show about?
My show was, we didn't really have like a specific topic. We would just like pick one, anything that has been happening lately, and we just like kind of riff on it for two hours. We did that for like three times a week.
And we meaning you had a co-host?
I did. I did have a co-host, yeah. And the main purpose the show was for was, first it was all in English. We didn't do it in Arabic because the goal was to reach people who did not live in Libya. So we streamed it online on the internet so like people like can listen to it, because we felt that there's been a lot of like media coverage about Libya. And obviously it doesn't really kind of like translates to people, and some of it, like, there's a lot of missing parts, so like we want to like provide that like missing part to people. And we had so many people listen to it from abroad, like, yeah. And we get Skype calls and talk to people, get their questions and whatnot. We obviously also broadcast it in like Libya as well, and people like could listen to it, which got mixed reactions because we went wild with it. We just talk about anything we want, and some of the topics we kind of like talked about were kind of like topics that people were not comfortable talking about yet.
And this was, shortly after the revolution or in the throes of the revolution?
It was
depending on what you define as revolution.
Exactly,
right?
Absolutely. We actually started the show during the revolution, like 2 months in. And then we went for maybe like a year and a half. The revolution ended, and then there was like a transitional period and all of that, and we were still doing the show. And yeah.
What was the show called?
It was called Tribute FM. That's what we called it. Yeah.
You got not just hate mail. I think anyone that's on the radio or on TV, you get hate mail. You just get used to that. But you got death threats.
Yeah, we did get a lot of death threats. Me and my co-host, we either get them. At first, we only got them on the cell phone, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. We have the phone number out there. Then I started getting them on my phone number,
your personal phone
exactly,
number.
Yeah, and then like my Facebook and like.
Now you're smiling while you're saying this.
I am, and I did even at the time, because like I was like 20, 21, and all of that was exciting for me. Like even getting there, just like felt like a thrill. I'm like, oh, I'm actually doing something that, even like if people hate it, it is something. And it didn't really matter to me. I'm like, ah, death row, who cares? Like, it's just, which I think about it now, and I'm like, oh, that was kind of dumb.
Well, the radio station did get burned down, right?
It did.
Because of you and your co-host?
Yes, for the most part.
Was it something specific you said, or was it just the cumulative effect of being on the air?
I think it was a lot of stuff, but I think the episode that we got a lot of hate for the most, we were talking about like the new face of the government and what that is going to be like and all of that, and we talked about the idea of having like a secular government, like a religion is something that's only practiced inside the mosque and that's it. It doesn't really apply to the new constitution or any of that. And people just didn't like that. People like, no, we have to get the laws from religion. And it was just like, we didn't really even have that in the past. So why have it now?
Well, I don't think of Gaddafi as a particularly religious person.
Not at all. No, not at all. So it was like that weird thing where people like, no, you don't talk about religion now. And part of it was like during the revolution, all of these like very extreme religious people came from their hideouts and they were like became more vocal at that point. And it wasn't something that we were used to.
Was radio or is radio a good way to learn to be a stand-up comic?
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't get the visuals, obviously, but there's so much you can do with a voice.
Absolutely, yeah.
Writing.
Exactly, yeah, because it made me kind of like think on the spot, like of like funny stuff to say and all of that. And that's what we did. Like if you go back and listen to the show, it was like mostly like very like just like a lot of humor, even with like
you were 21 years old, right?
Exactly, yeah. We were just having fun. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, you grew up in Benghazi.
I did, yes.
And your mom is still, she was a teacher, now she's a school principal. Your dad, a business guy.
That is correct, yes.
And you have a couple of siblings?
I do actually have four siblings.
Four siblings.
Yes, and I'm the oldest. I have three brothers and one sister.
I mean, would you say that was a pretty middle class life you had growing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we lived well. Like, both of my parents worked, and we had a house that we owned and everything, and for the first years of school, I went to a private school, and I was one of the few people who actually like was able to afford to go to a school that thought English as a second language and like thought it well, and like had like teachers from abroad who came and taught it in schools and stuff. So yeah, I would say, I mean, I did have a good life growing up.
Were you a funny kid?
I think I was. I like to think that I used to do the thing growing up when I used to kind of like write plays or whatever and then make my siblings act in them and do it in front of my family. And I don't know if they were nice about it and laughed or they actually liked it, but who knows?
You, in one of your stand-up, you talk about the, and I quoted you, the casual dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi. I thought that was an interesting way, and perhaps in hindsight,
maybe
it looks more casual than what's happening in Libya today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was casual because, like, you didn't really think about it. Like, Gaddafi was not someone I thought about until the revolution, to be honest. Or I would say until the social media. Yeah, because before that, it was just, like, very normal to live under him. And the main rule was, like, as long as you don't speak about the government or about him, you're okay. So, yeah, we don't really think about him. Like, in my mind, he was like, okay, once he dies, then his son will become the president, and it's fine, whatever, who cares. But, yeah, and not until, the social media, like, when I feel like a lot of people, like, got, like a taste of what it was outside of the borders of Libya. And then it was like, oh, people live that way?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, okay.
Is there kind of a nostalgia? I know we hear about that in Iraq, the kind of nostalgia for Saddam Hussein when you kind of knew what was what.
I mean, in Libya, yes, people do. I think people don't miss him. They miss the safety. Or they miss, at least it was like, it was a bad thing happening back then, but it was like the same kind of bad every day. And people like they can live, they can go to school, they can make money, they can do all of that as long as they keep a distance. But now it feels like there are no rules to protect yourself. It's just like you wake up every day and like, okay, here's another day, here we go. I have no idea who to keep away from. And there are so many rival groups. At least with Gaddafi, you had like one enemy. When now it's just like, yeah, and people have different opinions, and now they're kind of like broke families and friends and all of that. So it's kind of like,
a jungle. You have to pick a side, right?
Exactly.
When the sides are constantly shifting.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
You have a funny bit about how you did go to medical school for a while because your parents decided that that was your dream in life, right?
Yeah. They were like, yeah, I remember I finished high school and they were like, you always wanted to be a doctor. And I was like, did I? And they're like, yeah, since you were four, you wouldn't stop talking about it. I'm like, I don't think that's true. But they're like, yeah, you got to pick this or become an engineer. There's like, I'm like, I'm sure there's like other things I can do. They're like, nope.
Nope. That's it?
Yeah, and my brother went to like engineering school and he did actually like it. Well, I went to med school for 4 years and then I dropped out because I just...
Did you hate it?
I hated it. Like, I never hated something as much. I wasn't interested and I can tell that it wasn't for me just because looking at people around me, my friends and stuff who went to med school because they actually liked it, they were doing really well because they enjoyed it. And I'm like, I just can't do this. Like, I'm just... passing. That's what I'm doing. Yeah.
So what do they think, your parents think of you being a stand-up comedian?
They
wasn't exactly in the cards for them, right?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, like, before I became a stand-up comedian and while I was a stand-up comedian, I was in business school. And the thing with my parents is, as long as I went to college and I got my degree, that's good for them. And so I got my degree and then they were like, what are you doing with your degree? I'm like, I'm running me as a business.
That's the line?
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, I don't think that you're doing it. I'm like, no, I'm absolutely using all of the skills I learned in school and I'm growing me as a product and a business. And they were like, okay, well, as long as you're making money. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it's yeah.
Well, it helps they live in Tripoli and you're in Portland, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm doing really well.
Well, you did, and this was when you were in Portland. You studied supply management, right?
Supply chain management. Yeah.
Has that come in handy for you?
Not really, not at all. I've never used it. I think honestly, the only reason I wanted to do business school for sure. I was like, that was like something I was like really interested in. But I remember like, I already like spent 4 years in med school and I remember I met with an advisor in business school and I was like, okay, what is the fastest route out of this? And they're like, we have a new major, supply chain management, like that's thriving now and it is the shortest way out. And I'm like, that's all I need to hear. Yeah, sign me up.
We're almost having a break here, but it was, as I understand it, you took a public speaking course and you had a teacher that said, you know, you should think about stand-up.
He did.
Which is amazing.
After I finished my semester, he actually asked me if I was doing stand-up comedy. And I was like, no, I've never done it. I'm like, I'm a big fan of stand-up, but haven't tried it myself. And he was like, you should definitely try it. And he just like really pushed me into that direction. And then I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And now I'm doing it full-time. So I'm glad I took his advice.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That is Mohanad El-Sheikhi. And again, talking to us about growing up in Libya. And he lives now in Portland. He is indeed a stand-up comic. In fact, he's here in Philadelphia to do a private performance and joining us on Radio Times. Any questions or comments, you can call our show, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and if you are still with us or are joining us, our guest is Mohanad El-Sheikhi, and we are talking about his life in comedy. Here's another clip, and this is from the Helium Comedy Club in Portland last year.
Well, also, I saw in the news lately that the school district in Pennsylvania, you want to arm students and protect them by giving them rocks. It's 100% true. You want to arm students and protect them by giving them rocks. And that would work only in one case. Like, if the attacker weapon of choice was, like, scissors. Paper. Just
Again, another clip by our guest, Mohanad El Sheikhi. And we did Google that, and it is true. It's the yeah. Blue Mountain School District in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So was that just finding something in the news and saying to yourself, holy mackerel?
Yeah. No, I was actually on Twitter, and I saw the headline. And that was like the first thing that came to my mind, just like rock, paper, scissors.
Right.
Yeah. And I just like, and I tweeted it immediately, and I was like, oh, this can be a joke. I'll kind of like work on it and write it down.
Well, how do you, I mean, maybe it's an unfair question. So, you know, how do you do what you do? But, in terms of creating your comedy, and it's very narrative, I would say. I mean, yeah. In many ways it is storytelling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely very personal. I do take a lot of like from my personal life, and I put that on stage because I feel like people want to know about you. That's their main thing. They want to, but some of it is just like observations, like short, funny observations. Like you read a news article that stands out to you, and it's like different because you don't want to do like. You don't want to like go on with the same topics that everyone is talking about because some of it just gets really boring.
Sure.
Yeah, and people are just like over it. But yeah, I mean, like I just like try and like I have my phone all the time on me, and if think of something funny or like I'm talking to someone and something funny happens, I just like immediately like get my notes app and just like write like maybe like three words or something just to remember it, mm-hmm. and then later the day like I spend at least 2 hours a day just like kind of like. With a piece of paper just like writing down stuff. Some of it is just like not funny at all. It's just like me just like free writing, trying to get something. And then, yeah, and then at night I just go. I usually have like a show or two a night. I try in the middle of my act after like because I always start with like old stuff,
right.
End with old stuff. In the middle is like I try the new stuff, kind of like sandwich them in the middle and just try them out and see if they work. If they don't work, I kind of rewrite and try again until like it's ready for like stage.
Well, I noticed one where you say, I think you say, you know, you're from Benghazi, kind of waiting, you know, for the audience to react or cheer or
yeah.
or do something.
Yeah.
It's kind of a test joke. It
exactly.
Seems.
Yeah. I just throw it out there and just wait what I get. Sometimes, yeah, it's just like, it depends. Sometimes people clap and I'm like, sure. or like that clip, a lady was like, woo. And I was like, nope.
Is there a correct response?
There isn't. It's just like a fun thing for me to. And sometimes I say it, and I'm like, that usually gets a standing ovation. Thank you. You don't yeah. need to. Yeah, you don't need to stand. That's
right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to kind of to play off of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
So are you a tough audience for your jokes? I mean, obviously you have to try them out on yourself to make sure they mm-hmm. work. Are you a tough taskmaster?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like I'm. I have to rely on what other people say to me about my performances and what they think about my jokes, either online or in like after the shows. Because me personally, I'm like really hard on myself. I'm like, I hate every performance.
Do you really?
Yeah, because like every time I watch a video, I'm like, I should have done that. Or I can't believe I'm putting my hand there. Stuff that people do not notice at all. It's just me, like, kind of like, because I know what's going in my head at the moment. But it does help me a lot because I try and record every set that and like listen back to it. And sometimes, like, I videotape them just to see how I'm doing on stage. Because part of it is like not just joke writing, because you can be the best joke writer ever, but if your stage presence is not good,
mm-hmm.
if you're like, sometimes stuff. I have jokes that did okay when I did them like maybe a few years ago, and now I do them with more confidence. I'm like slow it down a bit and all of that, and it works way better than it did before, even though it is the same exact joke written down.
Interesting, but it's about your delivery and
exactly.
just the kind of cadence, the body language,
absolutely.
All of that put
absolutely.
Together.
Yes.
I mean, it is performing, right? It's
exactly.
acting. It's an art form.
It is acting, yeah. Because like for me, I'm like my persona on stage, I'm like this like very super confident person, even though that's not how I am in my everyday life. I'm like very anxious and like I think about stuff a lot. I just like talk to myself and whatever. But while... when I'm on stage, I'm just like, I feel nothing. I'm just like really focused on what I'm doing. I make eye contact with people, which is something I don't do in my real life that
Even
much.
Even though you're making eye contact with me?
I am. Well, that's, yeah, because I'm like, I'm on the show.
What else
now.
Are you going to do, right?
Exactly. But like if I'm walking down the street or like, I'm not really like, or I'm at a party or something. I'm not really like a really social person or something. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I rather spend my whole day at home just like doing stuff. I don't really, I don't really go out unless I have to, or I have a comedy show. Mm-hmm. That's where I feel like the most comfortable. It's just like it's something that you build on stage. Once you find your voice, then that's you, and it doesn't matter what's going on in your day. Once you're on stage, you just go into that persona and just do your performance and just leave.
Do you like that guy? I mean, the guy that you are on stage?
Yeah, absolutely. Because
do you like him better than the other guy that's at home?
Absolutely. I'm like, I wish I was that all the time. Yeah, because people – and it's funny because like people like when I finish my sets and something, they're not sure if they want to talk to me or not, or like because they're like just like intimidated by me, which is very funny to me because I'm like there's nothing to be worried about, you know?
Well, I'm thinking about that teacher that said to you when you were taking the public speaking class, you know, you should consider stand-up comedy. There must have been something, even before you had honed this personality, there must have been something at work then.
Absolutely. I think because my thing is just like I take really tough subjects and try and make them funny. And I do this with my act. Obviously, on YouTube, there's like 5 minutes. My act is like almost an hour. Right. And a lot of it is... is like taking like stuff that people like if I tell you like the topic, I'm like, I don't think that's funny. Like that doesn't seem like a joke. But I try to make it first. I have to connect it to something that people can relate to. And then once I kind of build that like relationship between us, then I can go on and make fun about whatever I want. It's just like, I mean, it's a tough thing because you got to do it over and over again.
Sure.
And test it and stuff like that. But
and
yeah,
every audience is different.
Every audience is different, especially now that I'm doing a lot of traveling. Because
right.
What hits in Portland doesn't hit the same in New York. And I have to kind of adjust and, like, learn my audiences. So my first show in New York, this is, like, me just kind of, like, learning what the audience is like.
And how do you do that?
It's just, like, by reading the room, seeing the comedians who go before me, what the audience react to more. Is it like the body language? Is it like what they say? Are they telling more stories? Are they like more like loud? Are they like slow? That kind of stuff. And then you kind of like and then I go on stage and do my material. I'm like, okay, maybe I need to adjust a bit. Maybe I should say it that way. And sometimes it's the topics, because some topics make sense in the West Coast, some topics don't make any sense here.
Absolutely. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Mohanad Elsheikhi, and he is a stand-up comedian, grew up in Libya. He was telling us a bit about his life growing up in Benghazi. He now lives in Portland and has been traveling around the country doing stand-up comedy and is here in Philadelphia. You can join us again, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. You did a TED Talk, and I thought it was really interesting. It was more serious, I would say.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where you said, you know, people find out I'm from Libya, and they just want to find out about all the horrible things that I have been through in order to survive and to be here, talk about war and trauma. But for you, it seemed the comedy was a way to tell your own story and
absolutely.
Not to have other people tell it for you.
Absolutely.
I found that really interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, because comedy, I'm like, I'm the person with the mic, obviously, and I get to do it on my own terms. Yes, I'm telling my story. I'm sharing it. I'm doing all of that. But I do it the way I like to do it versus like my first year here in like the U.S. and like how people like would the kind of thing I felt like people wanted from me. And the stories that I had to tell. Sometimes, like, even in class or, like, with professors or something, they just, like, want to hear about, like...
Tell us about the revolution, right?
Or exactly. And sometimes, like, it is kind of... It felt like, when I think about it now, it kind of felt rude when, they ask you about, like, stuff that are, like, very, very personal, like, your feelings and, like, how it must feel very hard. You must be this, you must be that. I'm like... I don't think you would ask it in any other situation. If like someone gets into like a car accident and can't walk anymore, you can't be like, it must be so bad to not be able to walk ever again. Like, you don't talk to people that way. So it felt like that kind of like people kind of like they disconnect from their human part, and they just want to hear, because to them it's just like it's a story. It's like going to see a movie. You hear about it for an hour and then you don't think about it that much after that. And also, obviously, like, I'm 28. The revolution was probably maybe, or like the war in Libya, it was like only 4 years of my life. And I'm like, there's so much else I'd rather talk about. Like, I'd rather talk about, I don't know, true crime. That's a passion of mine.
Oh, interesting. Well, you and everybody else, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, all of that. But with stand-up, it's just like, I can make fun of it. I can write the jokes. I make fun of me, but I also make fun of people as well. So it's just like kind of like 50-50 kind of thing. So, and it's more fun. And people like remember you differently that way. Yeah.
We live in such fraught political times. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe this is sort of how life is going to be. I do not know the answer to that. But I wonder just sort of how political you want to make your humor, how topical. There's a lot of late night TV comedy shows that are really going at, for instance, the president and others in political office. Does that interest you at all? And you know, you weren't born here, so you might have a slightly different perspective.
Absolutely, yeah. I honestly leave my topical humor to social media mostly. I'm obviously very interested in writing for like late night TV to make that like a career of mine, to write it like for someone else to do it or for a show or something. But when it comes to my stand up, I try to kind of like stay away from that. Because people see that on TV all the time, right. and the same topics just go over. Like, they're like maybe 8 or 9 late night TV shows, and sometimes the jokes feel the same. But that's what they do. That's what people tune in for. But if you go on stage and do that again, I'm like, okay, that's funny, but also like I don't like in my whole hour, I don't have a single joke about the president, because I'm like, every joke has been done. And I feel like from context clues, people would know how I feel about him. There's no need for me to go and talk about him. Yeah, and sometimes, like, if it's political, it's something like that joke about, like Pennsylvania.
Right.
Yeah. It's just like
or an easy target. You know?
It has to be something that is just, like, funny. Like anyone from any, like, I feel like with this joke, like, no matter what political party you are, you find it funny, because it's just like something that just feels dumb.
I'm though curious. You are, as I said, you grew up in Libya. I'm assuming you're Muslim.
I grew up Muslim.
Maybe not practicing.
Exactly. I grew up in a Muslim family. Yeah.
But at the same time, probably seen as Muslim in this country. And
absolutely.
I wonder if absolutely, yeah. That's tough for you.
I mean, it is, because people have a lot of assumptions about like how you are and what you feel and like what your opinions about like specific topics as well. And sometimes you don't get asked about these things. People just make that assumption. And I felt that sometimes, like even like living in Portland, which is like a very liberal city, and obviously have a big gay community there and stuff. And people assume that you have specific feelings about that stuff, or like my friends would go like to like a gay bar or something, and they were like, I don't know, do you want to go? And I'm like, why do you think I don't want to go? Of course I want to go and hang out. But it's just like funny, because like people are like, this guy is Muslim, this is how what he feels, and this is, and I'm like, it just like feels funny, because like, are you assuming that I have some kind of bigotry in me, and you're trying to respect that? I'm like, I don't get that.
Oh goodness. Yeah that's
exactly. I'm like, what a like weird way to think about it. Yeah. So, and obviously like, but not just that side. Obviously, you have the other side as well, which is people read my name on social media as Mohamed Al-Sheikhi, and they have all these assumptions about who I am. And I just get a lot of like on the right, a lot of trolls and a lot of like horrible stuff they say to me and like the stuff they send me. And
what do you do about that or anything?
For the most part, I just block people. Like, I'm like, I'm not, unless I have something funny to say back to them, it doesn't really bother me at all anymore. Like, they can say whatever they want. It's just like, it went from me being upset and mad about what they say about me or stuff, to me now feeling more sad about them. I'm like, what a horrible life you must be leading, that you're now on the internet harassing someone that you don't know. Like, it just feels very sad.
Because of their name, I guess.
Exactly.
Or the assumptions about what comes with a name like that.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just like saying, like, even like thinking, like being that hateful is just like, what a sad life you must lead. So I just feel sad. Yeah.
Do you get nervous before a performance? Are there certain things you do before doing your stand-up? To prepare yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's a different place, if it's a big show, if I feel like if I'm trying new stuff, I do feel nervous, like, before the shows and stuff. But I just try to remind myself, like, just have fun. Just people want you to succeed. Right. Like, the audience wants you to do well. I mean, one thing I just do, like, I spend maybe, like, half hour before, I just, like, pace around, just like go around the club or whatever the place I am. And sometimes I listen to my set just kind of like to prepare. Or I just like write my whole set list down just to have a visual of what I'm doing. And once I do that, like once I see it in front of me, I'm like, okay, I have my whole show here. Like I should be good. It doesn't matter. But yeah, once I'm on stage, that's it. Like I don't feel anything anymore. I don't feel nervous. I'm just ready to go.
You received asylum last fall.
That is correct, yes.
What has that meant to you?
I mean, it was a very big relief to me because I've been waiting for that for over 4 years since I applied in 2014. And it was something that I pushed into the back of my mind. I stopped thinking about it. But it was just like the end of like living in that kind of like limbo. Because before that, it was like, am I going to get approved? Am I not going to get approved? And what will that mean? And like, I have my whole life here. And I was like, I'm not sure what to do if it doesn't get approved. It's just like, there's going to be like a lot of like other like procedures that I have to go through and stuff. But once I got it, I was like, oh my God, like this is such a relief. Now I can just go on with my life, get my green card, travel, do stuff. Yeah.
And do they tell you? I mean, are they, you go to a meeting or you get a letter, or how does one learn one has asylum?
So you do an interview first. And I did mine a year before I got my asylum accepted. And the interview is like probably 3 hours or something, where them just digging into your story, asking you personal details and just going by the timeline, like one thing, and just making sure that you're like, your story like checks out and you are who you are. And I mean, I was like, I've been preparing for this for years now. I've got it down.
Well, Mohanad Elsheikhi, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And again, stand-up comedian Mohanad Elsheikhi here in Philadelphia to perform tonight. After this very short break, we'll be talking about the trade/tariff war along the U.S.-Mexico border. Stay with us. We'll be right back.